Davis in the gun, five receivers, three to the short side of the field to his right. He throws, oh, it's intercepted, and this is going to be a pick six for the BC Lions. Picked off by Bola Combo, and that is exactly what Ottawa didn't need right before halftime. 34-13 Lions.
TSN 1200.
There's AJ Jakubek, Jeff Avery from the call late Saturday night. And somehow, some way, the Red Blacks had kind of hung in there Saturday in the first half. They had a kick return or a missed field goal return for a touchdown and an opening touchdown. Like, it was not going very well, but somehow, some way, it was still 28-13. And then that happened in the final minute of the first half, and that was pretty much all she wrote. It would eventually be a 45-13 win by the BC Lions, dropping Ottawa's record to 1-4. They do not play this week, so they're on a bye, although it's a bit of a weird bye because they play next week, but it's in the middle of next week, not next weekend. So it's about a 10-day break for the Red Blacks to kind of right the ship here a little bit. There are still, nine games to go in this season. There are only two games out of second place, which gets you a playoff spot. That's the optimistic side of things, but right now, things are not going in the right direction. To talk more about it, we welcome to the show, as we do each and every Monday morning. We appreciate Paul Lapolis joining us here on the program. Good morning, Paul. How are you doing this morning?
Good. Until you played that clip for me.
Yeah, no kidding. Hey, before we get into the nuts and bolts of last Saturday and a look ahead to this week, this is a bye week, and I know you always want to rest up your players and keep them mentally and physically fresh. But what happens with the coaches? Do you send your coaches away for a few days as well to clear their heads in a situation like this?
Yeah, you know, I think an important thing when the schedule is set, you're consistent with your players and your coaches, you know, to, you know, a lot of these players and coaches come away and they come to work here, and some circumstances the families can't come. So for them to get the opportunity to go home for a couple of days, and with the technology nowadays, you can kind of work remotely, get your stuff done. And as you guys said, it's kind of a weird bye week. We don't really have that many days off. So, you know, because we play in the middle of the week. So the guys have to be back Thursday from CFL protocols. They have 2 day, anybody who's traveled has a, 2 day in-home quarantine. So they got to be here Thursday and Friday, but we can't meet together till Saturday.
What about you yourself? Do you need to get away as well?
Well, you know, like today I'll take the kids to school, but I'll go, you know, the head coach is a little different. I'll try to spend less time in the office, but today I'll go in, and today I'll kind of self-scout our defense the last four games, and the next day I'll do the offense while you have a little bit extra time, but still try to get a day, at least one day off here.
Boy, I was going to say, Coach, you have all that time off. It can end up being a grind. Is it also just nice for everyone with the way it started here to just regroup and, as you said, have a little time and come back fresh when you get back to practice?
Well, you know, we've already had one bye week, which was kind of weird, but our bye weeks haven't really been, you know, hey, you have a group of time off, because if you remember, we had a bye week after week one where we couldn't go anywhere, so we still had 3 days of practice. So at least this gives some people to get 2 to 3 days to be with family or go home and see some people.
With Paul Lapolis, the Red Blacks head coach. So, I'm sure you've had time to review at least some of the tape from Saturday. I know in our post-game show you expressed some disappointment in a lot of aspects of your team. So now that you've had the better part of 36 hours to kind of to go through it and go through it in your mind, what are you left with from Saturday's game?
Yeah, you know, and you know, I think offensively, you know, the consistency, not being consistent up front, you know, it's our fourth change up front in four games. And within that, you know, two injuries in the last two games. So we have, you know, basically our starting center moves out to tackle and somebody else goes in. You know, we're not consistent up front, and that shows in our run game, like our ability to run the football, our ability to pass protect. We had, I think seven pressures on or 10 pressures on the quarterback in this past game, you know, and you just can't move the ball effectively when that happens. You know, 2 weeks in a row with a, you know, turnovers and obviously a pick six, and probably the ability to run the ball. I think offensively are the three things we've got to, you know, the third thing we've got to continue to develop and get to a point where we're good. And, defensively, you know, we just have to do a better job disrupting rhythms. It's one thing to make sure we keep them out of the end zone, which we were doing early in the season, but we just, you know, you have to force more two and outs. So, you know, that helps your team, you know, so you don't have to flip the field every time offensively or special teams wise, but also just, you know, get them off the field so they don't hold. And, you know, certainly whether we pressure with four or five or six people, we got to get home better and help that process of disrupting. And I know our special teams guys were, you know, disappointed with, you know, what they gave up for some, you know, obviously a long return on the missed field goal and certainly to start off the game with the big returns. And, you know, we'll work to getting better at that.
Dominic Davis, no doubt in the athletic ability coach, but at 32 years old, and from what we've seen here in Ottawa, hey, there's some great plays, but under pressure, as we saw at the end of the first half there, he ends up throwing the pick six. What ends up happening to him? Is it just trying to force things? Is it just a mental letdown?
Yeah, you know, there are times when, you know, certainly just, you know, whether the pressure up front or just the, you know, he doesn't see where his primary read is. He kind of flips his head and just, you know, happened later in the game where they almost picked the ball off. You know, he kind of couldn't find his first read, and then he kind of flipped his hips and saw something that's kind of not in our progression. And the reason it's not in our progression is you can't see the player to the right, and he just tries to throw it there, and then the player almost picks it off because he couldn't see him. So trying to keep him focused on staying with, hey, it's the field number two receiver. And if that's covered, come down to this player right here and making sure he does that. You know, he's going to do that more consistently. But there were some good things from Dom. Let us, you know, it was 14-0. We drive the length of the field and, you know, nice touchdown pass to Ryan Davis versus cover zero. They brought, you know, they pressured the quarterback and he got the ball out of his hands to create two first downs. So some good things, but, you know, we're not where we need to be.
Are you at this point contemplating a change at quarterback for your next game?
Let's put it this way. Like, that's always part of the process. You know, after two games of Matt, we're kind of watching, like, how can we improve? As I said before, it's not all on Matt. Like, you know, we need to be more consistent up front to help whatever quarterback's back there. But, you know, Dom will be the starter going he'll start against Hamilton, but we will certainly, you also have to see the improvement of Matt each week and also just the ability for us to move the ball, but also protect the ball. So, you know, that's going to be an evaluation as we continue to go, but it's good to get Dom in the game, good to get him in opportunities to play. So,
as you can imagine, Coach, there's a lot of frustration there amongst your fan base, and you know, some suggesting, and this is a natural course of action when a team is struggling, especially a quarterback, of, well, just throw in one of the young guys. You got a couple of young guys. Are they, either of those guys, anywhere close to being able to play at this stage of their CFL career?
Yeah, I think that's a difficult thing. Especially these guys haven't even had a preseason game, so we like. You know, we like our young guys, but we do understand they've never played in a CFL football game. And when the lights go on and some of the issues come out there, it could be worse. So, you know, we like our young guys. We just don't. We think we have the veterans right now to put ourselves in a position to give us the best chance to win.
Would you consider at some point, if you get into another game in which it's not close, giving them some action in a fourth quarter of a game that was already out of reach?
Yeah, the problem is with the rosters now, you know, so with the roster going from three quarterbacks to two, mm-hmm. that guy's never just on the roster.
Right.
You know, so I know that was something the league has done, but it also hurts the development of the younger guys because you never get a younger guy, you know, to either do the short yardage package or he doesn't get that opportunity. So, yeah.
In the case of Matty Nichols, 2019, played 9 games. We had a year off. He's played 5. When you say working on things, Coach, is that getting more into kind of game feel? Is it physically getting better? Or what are you looking for him in practice?
Just making sure, you know, he goes a full week, you know, with the arm strength, right? Just make sure his arm strength's great and he's locating all the throws and all that stuff. So, you know, I think mentally he's fine. We just got to make sure, you know, physically he's fine.
Paul Lapolis is our guest, head coach of the Red Blacks. In the struggles early in the season, you could point to the fact that your defense was playing well. The last couple of games, that has lapsed as well. What are you seeing in your defense that's allowing them to put up the number of points that's being put up against them?
You know, I think two things, you know, first and foremost, we have to tackle better defensively, you know, and I think on Brian Burnham's touchdown tackle, four guys missed a, you know, didn't tackle him. I had an opportunity to tackle him, didn't tackle him. You know, that's part of the game, right? You got to be able to block and tackle. That's been a frustration, I think. In the Montreal game, we had some opportunities to get people off the field. You know, they catch a 3-yard pass and they turn into a 10-yard gain. So our ability to tackle, you know, we've got to come back and make sure we're putting players that can tackle on the field and make sure we practice our, you know, as much as we can, our tackling. That's one thing. And then, you know, certainly, as I said off the top of the show, we have to, you know, Mike Riley completed 85% of his passes. So we have got to be, when we play zone, we've got to be in our spots in zone that don't leave open receivers, and make sure that, you know, when we pressure and get the ball out of his hand quickly. A couple times we pressured and he was able to escape and scramble for a first down. And just knocking them off a rhythm somewhat. You know, we do understand the situational football. If it's second and extra, you hold, you know, you let them come get some yards, get them off the field. But we certainly on second and medium, I think last week they converted 80% of their second and mediums. And we can't have that. You know, if they get any yardage on first and 10, that we make it an automatic conversion on second and medium. It's not good enough.
Five games in for almost all the teams, Coach. Are we now starting to see the very best of other oppositions where they've worked out the rust?
Well, you know, what's weird is that's kind of been the thing everyone's been talking about of, you know, where there's, you know, possibly more rust on offense and defense. And, you know, it's been, I know a lot of teams have tried to work out kinks, whether it be offense. I think each group takes turns, right? Whether it's, but the defenses have really played well this season. I know that, you know, we faced some good ones and we watched Winnipeg again this weekend, just, you know, kind of being the class of the league defensively. So, you know, I do think it's been a little longer run for some of the offensive guys. I'm not sure why, but you know, we'll keep working at it.
Coach, any concern whatsoever that in the midst of a four-game losing streak, you're starting to see some fracture within your team?
No. You know, I like our kids. You know, I think our kids have a belief in coaches and players. But, you know, as I told them the other day, I'm less concerned about of getting a win. I'm concerned about us tackling better. I'm concerned about us blocking better, putting ourselves in position to do the things we need to do to just execute, stay on the field, make our plays, and then eventually wins come, right? We got to beat Hamilton. We just got to focus on getting a win against the Hamilton team. I think our unit does a good job each day coming to the building, preparing to win, but we're not doing it well enough during the game. We're not doing the things that winning football teams do, whether it's turnover margin, getting people off the field. Those things, you know, we have to play better or else you don't win games.
You're new, obviously, to the situation here in Ottawa. There's lots of new places, players, but there's lots of new players in lots of places this season. From where you started in the offseason, a long offseason that went for, you know, a year and a half, to where are you surprised that things have reached the level that they have through the first five games of the season?
Yeah, absolutely. I did not expect to, you know, us to be sitting here at this record, but, you know, you expect to win each game. And so, yeah, I'm certainly disappointed and working my tail off to, you know, fix this and get us to where we need to be.
We'll ask you finally the question we seem to ask at the end of each one of these, which after a loss is, I know that you're evaluating the players on your roster. There are some players that are out there potentially to be signed. Kind of, is there any plans to bring in somebody, you know, I'm talking about experienced CFLers into the fold?
Well, you saw we signed some players in the last couple of days, and you know, we signed some players that, you know, that have either been in camp with us before, that have gone through the training camp exercise, or have got some CFL experience. And you know, part of that process is, you know, you can, if you want to bring it, it's one harder in COVID to bring players in. But once you do bring players in, if they haven't been through a training camp, if they haven't had a lot of experience, it's, you know, at certain positions, it's hard, you know, possibly receiver, it's hard to be able to say, okay, in 3 days, he's going to perform at a high level and understand the system, or after a week, you know, understand all the things that go into it. So you want to have some guys with CFL experience on your TR in case that happens.
All right, Coach, always appreciate the time and the insight. Thanks a lot.
Thanks, guys. Take care.
All right. There's Paul Lapolis, head coach of the Ottawa Redblacks, joining us in the Gabriel Pizza Hotline. Gabriel Pizza, the bigger, better pizza. Order online at GabrielPizza.com.
Yeah, and some pretty good energy from the coach right there, JR. And that's the beauty of professional sports, I guess, as a fan as well. But when you work within it, man, it can be the best job in the world and not even a job at times. And then there's other times it just sucks a little energy out of you. And he's the leader, right? I mean, everyone's looking to how he's going to respond. And boy, how he even handled it at home, man, it can just suck the life out of you. And does not look like, unfortunately, for this group that it's necessarily getting any better. That's the tough part, right? Sometimes you realize, man, we're just kind of underperforming. Mm-hmm. Doesn't feel like that, unfortunately, with this group. Just feels like they're not very good.
No, I would agree 100%. Yeah, yeah. So I guess the news out of all of that for Red Blacks fans is that Dominique Davis will be the starter for the next game versus Hamilton coming up a week from Wednesday. All right, thoughts on what the coach had to say are always welcome. You can text us at 12-1200, tweet at us at TSN1200. Keep the phone lines open at 750-1200. Red Blacks, as he mentioned, will be back on the practice field. Looks like Saturday, next game coming up a week Wednesday versus Hamilton. That one feels like that's a must-win at this stage of the game.
We said that again, Montreal, right?
Well, but that was a sort of must-win. This one is a must-win.
Okay,
that's right. If you think about what I'm saying right there, that sounds smart. It was a sort of must-win versus a must-win. Okay? Trademark must-win.
I like the CFL, though. You could be like 2-10 and still be a couple games out of a playoff spot.
All right, we'll take a break. Come back with much more here on a Monday morning. You're listening to Sports Radio TSN 1200. Good morning. JR, Simmer, and Hammer with you. Thanks again to Paul Lapolis for joining us. Tim writes on text, I hope Paul Lapolis watched the Jays weekend production. That comes from Tim.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, the Blue Jays. They only outscored the Red Blacks in one of the games, right? Yeah. Or was it two? They got 22. They had 47 on the four games.
Yeah.
22 of which came yesterday, 11 of which came in game two of the doubleheader. So I'm doing the math. I'm going backwards here. 22, 11. They only had 11 in the other games. So really, I mean, the Red Blacks outscored them in three of the four games. So there you go.
Yeah.
That's all good.
Yeah, and must, as you say, JR, when coaches talk and you look at this and say, hey, if we can start, you know, doing some things better. I know you've referenced the CFL. The reason a lot of the guys are in the league is they struggle to tackle, which is kind of interesting in football. But a quarterback situation where you kind of look at it and realize you're going nowhere short or long term with either choice at this point. And that could be a little deflating. You keep going at it, but you don't look at either of those guys right now and think, hey, this is just trying to survive the season at this point.
Mm-hmm. We've kind of reached that fork in the road where I think fans are, well, it becomes the dangerous part for the franchise, right?
Very
the team
much, yeah.
Where people just kind of give up. And the worst thing that you want is a disengaged fan base.
Very much so.
You want an engaged fan base, whether they're angry or happy because you're winning a lot, or angry because you're losing but you're competitive, or angry at official, or whatever it might be.
Yeah.
We've reached the stage now where I think there's a and part of it is the fact that three of the first five games, well, two of them have been late Saturday night games, so people are, I think, not as engaged as they might
for
be
sure.
Anyway.
Yeah.
But this is a dangerous point in the season, I think, where fans might check out unless they find a way to turn things around.
Oh, absolutely, JR. Destination, a lot of games you go to, now you get into it. It's still going to be gorgeous for the next month and a little bit, but you also, on Saturday, all of a sudden, Ottawa Center is just a rookie game. Some of the interest in that, then turn the page of Brady Tkachuk signs and you start training camp. Yeah, I think for where the CFL is realistically still at, there's a thought of mentally and, more important, economically, what am I going to pour my money into, that a lot of people quickly will think about trying to attend even Senators preseason games.
And it was interesting, just wrote a couple of things down on Twitter yesterday about the game yesterday morning after the loss on Saturday. And I'm not making this an either or, but people tend to kind of choose their battles, right? And when it comes down to a struggling football team in this case, is the blame in part on the coach, or is the blame on the general manager? And it's interesting to me that by and large, and this is, again, this is not a scientific poll, but judging by the reaction, at least in my timeline, I think Marcel Desjardins is taking more of the blame for what's happening with this Red Blacks team than Paul Lapolis is.
No, I think Paul Lapolis, people first of all don't know enough about him, JR, but he's had a winning pedigree coming in, and it's not that long ago, although probably helped Marcel Desjardins, that you had the tough divorce against very popular Coach Campbell. And then I think word on the street or thought is that it doesn't feel like there's enough out there from a skill position, whether or not they're spending, what they're spending to, and how the overall team is. So, yeah, I totally agree with what you're saying.
Well, and again, this is the part of the equation of what we don't know, and this speaks to the same situation with the Ottawa Senators. Like, we can sit here and blame certain decisions that Pierre Dorion company may make.
Yeah, yeah.
We don't know the conversations that happen between managers and owners sometimes, and whether you know how much a team has to spend. Yeah. Like, we do know this, that Brad Sinopoli and Alex Mateus both made over $200,000 last year with the Red Blacks, retired just before camp.
Yeah.
I don't know that anybody's been brought in that where that money's been spent.
Yeah, for sure.
And I know that is a feeling. Whether it's, again, accurate or not, this part we don't know. But one of the things that's out there, the feeling among the fan base is that Oseg is not spending enough money on the Red Blacks.
No, for sure. And you also don't, you know, in trying to understand the books, the overall operation, I'd love to see kind of the bills. And then when you also have Atletico's its own entity, but from a 67's perspective, in revenue lost, operating costs, after having a year off, JR, what do the books look like? And now as you roll back, only having 7 home games at a maximum of 15,000, how much is that paying? So, it'd be very interesting to kind of see where they're at. And from the Sen side, same thing. When you see the Bodker trades made or the Brassard, where guys have gotten bonuses and everything else. I mean, hey, that's almost always when you've had a mandate from ownership to bring in those type of contracts. I'm so respectful for Pierre Dorion, where you have to stick handle through a lot of stuff where, hey, people are like, what the hell are you doing? Well, you're being told to do a certain amount of these things. Otherwise, you don't make certain trades. I mean, it's pretty simple. I mean, but you're forced into it based on budgetary reasons.
I guess my question would be, the Ottawa Red Blacks are not in a different situation than what's going on in Toronto or what's going on in Hamilton. If we're talking about restrictions on attendance and impact on the bottom line from that.
Yeah.
You know, those two teams are both in Ontario as well.
Yeah.
So I look at it and I go, man, the Toronto Argonauts sure seem to add a lot of firepower in the offseason. And the Hamilton Tiger Cats, well, they were a Grey Cup finalist last time. And, you know, they seem to be able to still be, you know, paying, seem to, on the surface at least, have a lot of skill. I mean, I'm talking specifically about skill position players, quarterbacks in particular, that help you win football games in the Canadian Football League. And it doesn't seem like in Ottawa, again, hurt by some late retirements, no doubt about that. And if that was unexpected, no way of knowing whether, the players had talked to management about the potential that they could retire. And I understand at the 11th hour, it's hard to replace a good veteran Canadian player. They aren't just sitting out there waiting to be hired.
No, for sure.
They're usually signed elsewhere. I understand the constraints that the Red Blacks in their particular situation may be dealing with. But I just wonder if they're turning over every stone to try to spend some money and improve the team this year, or whether they're kind of like, we're going to take our lumps this year look at next offseason. I've already talked about the fact of, look, they're not going to be rolling back maybe with either of these two quarterbacks next year. I just can't see it. You're not going to be able to sell that to the fans.
No.
I look at what's going on in Hamilton right now. They've got two quarterbacks, both of whom are in the last year. They got Dane Evans, who just got injured. They've got Jeremiah Masoli, who unfortunately has hurt a lot, but he's a veteran quarterback. One of those two guys presumably is going to shake loose in Hamilton. There's some other good, there's a good young QB or two that's getting some playing time in the league.
Yeah.
That maybe, once again, it's kind of like the Arbuckle situation when he first came to Ottawa, where Ottawa, again, is going to have to go outside of their organization to try to solve their quarterback problem.
Yeah, sure feels like that. Now, the landscape also look a little different a year from now as far as players from the United States. How do you handle it, JR? But yeah, it kind of looks like nobody on the roster will be good enough in a sense. Now you take a quarterback that somebody else has developed, which there's nothing wrong with. I mean, Trevor Harris for the small sample size, and Arbuckle we never saw play, but certainly they're much closer than the kid you're bringing out of college. It takes a couple of years to get used to the game.
If we go through the league right now, okay, from west to east, Mike Riley didn't start in BC. Trevor Harris didn't start in Edmonton. I'm talking about start their career.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Cody Fajardo didn't start in Saskatchewan. Zach Collaros didn't start in Winnipeg. Nick Arbuckle didn't start in Toronto. Dane Evans did start. Jeremiah Masoli. I'm trying to think now. Yeah. I think he started in Hamilton. Okay. And Vernon Adams started in Montreal, went elsewhere to Saskatchewan, went back to Montreal.
Oh, okay.
My point being of the
and
other.
Bo Levi Mitchell start. Was he a Calgary guy?
Yes, always.
Okay, yeah.
My point being. The other eight franchises in the league, six of them have quarterbacks that were mentored in other places. So what Ottawa has struggled to do to identify and develop their own quarterback is not unique.
No.
Now, the fact that there's no one that started in Ottawa that's gone anywhere else and been any good, right? That the questions need to be answered on that part of it, that Ottawa's never been able to develop their own quarterback, whether it's for themselves or whether they go somewhere else. That's a legit question. But the fact that they are always seeming to have to go out of market to get a quarterback is not unique to them.
Yeah, very strange that you start out with the caliber, although older, of a Hank Burris. Then you go to Harris, and now all of a sudden you slide down a slippery slope of watching a little Dominic Davis. Now and again.
Well, they had Arbuckle. If last season wasn't canceled,
for sure.
Who knows how it all turns out, right?
Yeah,
Arbuckle may become. And I'll say one other thing, and people are like, everybody's got revisionist history glasses on at this point about, they should have never let Arbuckle go.
Yeah,
I tell you what, man, if you've watched Nick Arbuckle play for Toronto, he's been okay. He's got promise. He's younger. There's promise. But there's no guarantee this guy is going to be an elite CFL quarterback.
Would I rather have him than
what's in Ottawa right now? Absolutely. For sure. But there's nothing to say what's gone on in Toronto right now is like, okay, this guy's destined for the CFL Hall of Fame.
Yeah, no, you're 3-2, and numbers very basic. I think had, one touchdown the other day, a couple interceptions. I guess more in a year like this, JR, what I would prefer, though, is an opportunity to see, right? I'm not saying he's coming in and saving the day and the record be any better, but at least if it felt like, hey, I got 14 games here to see where the guy can go to the next level for a following season versus, and again, this is also name familiarity, so much of what we saw initially from the Sinopolis to the Burrises to a lot of Agotts, other guys, you know, you've got to then almost restarting the franchise year after year in the CFL, that you're going to reintroduce the next flavor and try to get the fan base kind of excited or used to it.
Okay. Anyway, your thoughts and a bunch of texts have come in. I'll kind of comb through it and we'll come back with some of your reaction to that. But I want to take a break because when we come back, Sens Development Camp, day three today, this afternoon. To touch on the comments of Sean Donovan, who was a guest on In the Box with Steve Lloyd and Steve Bunda on Friday, and touched on a number of the prospects. Now, this is before camp began on Saturday. They've been on the ice now for a couple of days. But some interesting comments on one player in particular who I think a lot of Sens fans would certainly like to see make the team for the coming season. So we'll come back and we'll touch on that. Don't forget, Duke Ellingson will join us after 9. We'll go through week one of the NFL. Some surprises. Some shockers, actually, in week one. So, that template for the season ahead, or just an aberration? We'll get Duke's thoughts on that coming up after 9, right here on Sports Radio, TSN 1200.
This is TSN 1200.
Welcome back, 850. Day 3 of Sens Development Camp. Go this afternoon. They'll do it again tomorrow. And then Wednesday, they kind of move from skill development, which is what development camp is all about, to an actual rookie camp. It's all a bit weird because development camp normally, if everything was as it was, let's say, all the way back to 2019, you actually have your development camp right after the draft and you invite your new draftees. The NCAA players can come. And they can be a part of that, but because they're in school, they can't come. And because we're doing this right on the cusp of training camp. So that's why things are a little bit different. And they're morphing right from development camp right into rookie camp, which will start Wednesday. And then a couple of prospects games versus the Habs game here Saturday afternoon at 4 o'clock. We'll carry it for you live. Dean and Gord will have the call here on TSN 1200. And they're back to Montreal a week from today to play the return game against the Habs prospects. So Sean Donovan, the Sens, one of the Sens development coaches, under the watchful eye of Pierre McGuire. Jesse Winchester was on Friday with Steve Lloyd and Steve Bunda. They touched on, at that point, camp hadn't begun, but Dono's been talking to a lot of the top prospects throughout the summer and, well, for the past year. They touched on the likes of Shane Pinto, who he had on the show last week, Ridley Gregg, been lots of talk on him. Roby Järventi, who's come over from Finland, he'll be playing his first year in the American Hockey League. Angus Cruikshank, we saw him at the end of last year when he signed out of the NCAA, Lassie Thompson as well. But I think if you were to poll the average Ottawa Senator fan beyond the NCAA, the top pick guys, who would you most like to see make the team? This guy has instantly become a fan favorite, I think for a lot of different reasons. But Igor Sokolov, right now, I think if you were to poll people, they would most like to see him make the Sens. He's a real feel-good story. And apparently, according to Sean Donovan, is working himself onto an NHL roster perhaps sooner rather than later.
Sokolov came in and was our leading scorer in Belleville. And you know what? He really improved. I mean, conditioning was always a thing that the people had talked about. And he came in really good condition. And this year, he's in off-the-charts condition. So he's done everything we've asked and more, way more than we've asked. He's ready. You know, he's coming here in his mind and competing for a spot. And there's spots.
All right, so there's Sean Donovan in the box on Friday. He went on to say, when he talked with the Ottawa media, this quote from Sean Donovan on Sokolov: "He just reminds me, and you don't want to make a comparison, but it's just like when Mark Stone came in, and it was like, I'm here for a job. To me, that's what Sokolov looks like."
Yeah.
End quote.
And also, I could hear the cutoff there when he said there's spots open. McGuire grabbed the phone and hung it up. hey, this case, and our correspondent and good friend out in Cape Breton, Johnny Hanna, who works with the team out there, just following it. And when I hear, to that point, the exact things that he's worked on, his quickness, his skating. And when you do throw that out there, JR, everybody's in great shape. Everybody had a great summer. But when you throw out the guy is off the charts, and from the sample size I saw last year, and people have talked a little bit about Dadonov and what you're going to end up doing. Well, quite simply, I got it on the right side right now. I got Batherson, Connor Brown. To me, there's a spot right there with probably White in the middle and maybe Paul on the other wing, where Mr. Sokolov, and it's only 1 year in the American League, but still, lots of guys have transitioned that quickly. Boy, I think right there is a spot, and not that they're going to rush him or anything else, but I am so excited to see him come Saturday. And I'll also say this from a Sens perspective, JR, when you take out drafts, when you get to a rookie camp, and for who's already really in the big camp now, there aren't many prospects generally on a team. You should be thankful if you go Saturday, and I don't know Montreal's roster, but there's a bunch of guys from him to Kastelic to Cruikshank to Greg to Sogard that I'm really excited to see, to Lassie Thompson, that I think legitimate prospects. So yeah, it's going to be really neat to watch him Saturday and all of a sudden see where the legs are at.
He had 15 goals in 35 games with Belleville last year. It came from, and there were no fans at games, right?
Yeah,
so it was mostly on viewings on AHL TV.
Yeah.
I remember the very first goal I think he scored, or maybe the second one, because all we had at that point were reports of, right? Yeah. Reports of this guy, man, the guy can score in the Quebec League as an overager. But he can't really skate a lick. And then you watched him and you kind of went, well, that's not that bad. It's not as bad as I thought it was going to be. It's certainly not as bad as when Mark Stone first showed up.
No.
It's way improved from that. And then the word has come that he put in a bunch of time. I read Ian Mendes' article in The Athletic last week when he did a pretty deep dive on Sokolov and talked with a skating coach out in Halifax. He did a bunch of work in the summer with that person, skill development, et cetera, and then also worked on his fitness. Yeah, I think when he was drafted, or maybe when he played in his last year, I think he was listed at 6'4", 240.
Yeah.
And you're going, like, nobody's playing at 240. Like, that's overweight.
Unless you're Big Z.
Well, yeah.
but you're
now
right.
He's listed. Yeah. He's listed on the Sens training camp roster. And I don't know if this was from last year. He's listed at 216.
Yeah.
I thought I read somewhere that he may be down closer to 210.
Ooh.
6'4", 210, if there's, some muscle on that, and it's not just losing weight for losing weights to get lighter. But all of it is adding up to a guy who is putting in the work, realizes there's a job there to be won, be it short-term or longer-term, or in his case, probably, hopefully, both.
Yeah.
And is doing his utmost to try to make sure he's on the team's radar screen.
Yeah, very much so. Opening night lineup against Mitz Marner, and all he looks over is, I kill you. He's looking like Ivan Drago out there. Like, these stories, JR, though, and this is for anybody out there, no big surprise. I love the power skating coaches, because they do work and they can help. But as you know, as you get older, if you're not doing that along with an incredible off-ice program to work on your quickness, it's really hard, right? It's not like all of a sudden a little power skating is going to, it's got to be incorporation. And that's where, for the Mark Stones and for anybody out there, if you want to spend some money versus just playing a bunch of games in the summertime, JR, that's where you can. And there was a thought way back when a kid was drafted, he can't improve his skating. That was really in the industry for a while, was, they are what they are. Well, history now shows us with Stone, everybody else, that's not the case. And when you hear the story and you hear a guy like that, and I don't know what I expected, if it was somebody that you pushed to the crease and he couldn't move any further when he got drafted, when I saw him rotate through the neutral zone last year and grab some
that
speed,
was the goal, eh?
Well, yeah, I was like, okay, well, I don't think that was supposed to be what I was expecting. I was just expecting this guy that was around the net and then basically you had to help him get to the other end and back. Oh, not the case at all. And when you talk about a rig that size, start to mix in with Paul to Tkachuk to some of the rest of the group there, Austin Watson, what a nice mix of size and speed and skill and everything else the Ottawa Senators could have up front. Like, as you project out just what's in-house right now from Pinto and everybody else, well, that's got to make you awfully excited. Well, who wouldn't want a player like that already mixed in with hopefully a Brady Tkachuk sign and Stutzle and a whole bunch of other guys?
The skating coach that Ian interviewed out east that he worked with, and this was at the behest of his agent a couple of years ago. This was before his overage year, so before he was even drafted by the Sens. I guess his agent sat down with him and said, look, man, you want to be a player or not? This is what you're going to have to do.
You got the heavy boots. We got to make them better.
Yeah, and I guess, and I think the skating coach is a woman. But anyway, I think she looked at him the first time and said, like, I've never seen anybody at that stage be a worse skater. Literally couldn't do any edges at all. It was like, you know how they teach crossovers to 6-year olds, and you skate around the face off circle. Do your it sounds like it almost reached that. Starting from scratch level, believe it or not. And she said, and she took video of him from then to where he is now. And it's incredible the progression that he's made. He's never going to be a fantastic skater. You in a little bit of, you know, I don't want to say you are what you are, but you can improve a lot. And it sounds like he has improved to the point where it's passable to maybe even average now, and maybe even it gets a little above average.
Yeah, absolutely. And when you see that as well, JR, generally coming out of a European program like the Soviet Union, no matter where you are, skating is usually your strength, right? Where you think, oh, there's no chance coming to Canada. And is it Shelly Kettles that ends up teaching here? And you see an awful lot of this. Now, the next part, because really to me, and why I incorporate this, the muscle memory of going out and showing a guy or a girl how to skate differently at an older age is one thing, but if it's not incorporated with the training off ice to make those muscles do that, then you just waste your time, right? Like, an hour session isn't going to allow me come game time to incorporate that, and I don't want to be thinking about it. So, like I said, it's another one of these great man stories of a kid drafted. Then we're not talking like 5 or 6 years in the system, right? Not even talking Nick Paul. Like, it sounds like someone legitimately that's knocking on the door to make the hockey team this year.
Yeah, we'll see. We'll see. I mean, there is a lot of excitement. And again, because it's such a great story, he's such a humble guy. He comes from, you know, what doesn't appear to be a great background in Russia, kind of came over here and cast his lot in junior hockey, worked his way up from, you know, speaking apparently zero English when he first arrived. He's in Cape Breton, which is, you know, a bit of an outpost. Drake Batherson takes him under his wing. Apparently, it was Drake Batherson that kind of gave the final endorsement on should we take this guy or not to the scouting staff when they asked about him. But it was an interesting story where Batherson talked about that every time they went on a team outing, and again, he doesn't speak any English at all, they would drag him out with him, or they'd take him to the movies or whatever. Yeah. Didn't speak any English, and that's kind of how he learned the language. But you can, with guys like that, it's easy to let them, especially junior hockey players. Let's face it, right? You're any teenager, you only think about yourself. You don't normally think about other people a whole heck of a lot. So for Batherson and the other players on that team to take a guy who doesn't speak any English, and you kind of go, you know what, we're gonna try to bring out the best in this guy. For them to have that at 18 and 19 years old, I think speaks highly of their character. And for the kid to be willing to kind of step out of his, you know, because a lot of people will just retreat, right? When I'm not on the ice, I'm just gonna go into my little corner and just be by myself. Yeah. For you to have the wherewithal, the guts, or whatever, to step out of your comfort zone, And to be able to take those steps, I think, says something about that as well.
It really does. And it'd be easy, JR, nowadays to go home and be on your telephone or on your Skype calling home playing video games. And this is also at the National Hockey League level, not even much for the players, but one of the great parts about a good organization is that if a gentleman comes over with a partner, making sure that person gets out of the house too, right? It's really easy for the wife or girlfriend to hide. So, no, show some real nice leadership. And he is from Yekaterinburg, and that's the hometown of Mr. Pavel Datsyuk. So I don't know if he didn't get to the Datsyukian hockey school during the day, during the years, or whatever it is. It's just a neat story that he's figured it out and physically turned things around. And like I said, I'm excited to see him play Saturday at 4.
Josh writes, I follow on Twitter only one Sens player, and it's Sokolov. I think he's going to be a surprise this year. That comes from Josh. Certainly is a fan favorite, again, as I said, because of the story and everything else that surrounds him. I haven't seen him play, so I'll be interested to watch on Saturday as well.
Yeah.
I think it would still be at this stage, given the fact he's only 1 year pro where he's come from. I still think it's a greater chance than not that he's not ready for the National Hockey League.
For sure.
I think the more important thing is this guy an NHL player at some point?
It
doesn't have to be this year. It doesn't have to be forced. If he's not ready, he's not ready. I think everybody... thinks the development model of what the Sens have got in place in Belleville with Troy Mann is top level, and that another half year and a half, whatever it might be, spent down there is not the end of the world either.
Oh, absolutely. And what kind of a role do you expect if you're with a White and Paul offensively? Do you want him to go down and have a 40-goal season? Lots of things. And I think also will be very interesting, JR, and not watching enough of him, what does he also do with that size away from the puck, right? Like, how is he along the boards? How is his ability down low? Certainly, we've seen that he's a goal scorer. How can he apply that now on a team that, like everybody else in the National Hockey League, is looking for big bodies like this that can be a little more physical?
Hey, boys, should this season be considered a failure if the Sens don't make the playoffs? That's from Sonny.
Absolutely not.
Ridly Gregg is Ottawa. Ottawa needs a Mike Fisher-type center. That apparently is the word on this guy. We'll see.
Yeah, also still a boy, though, JR, in my estimation, and I'd be shocked. First of all, they want to get off to a decent start, and he's a hell of a hockey player, but he did not play a lot of hockey last year, and I think the thought there is go back to Brandon, get stronger, play in a World Junior. Not that he won't get a small look, but I don't think they're going to waste their time. Or people have asked, do you think he'll play the 9 games? I know this is a year to be fooling around with a junior player. I think he'll be right back to junior.
All right. Development camp continues today. Again, rookie camp starts on Wednesday, and then the prospects game Saturday at 4 here on TSN 1200. We'll take a break, get a top of the hour news and sports update, and then when we come back, we're going to talk to Duke Ellingson, our football analyst. We'll look back on week one of the NFL season, some surprises. Some not-so-good surprises if you're a Bills or Packers fan, at the very least. And maybe some surprisingly good teams as well. Only through 1 week. What'd you do in your fantasy football? I got two teams. Looks like I'm going to be 0-2. Unless Darren Waller has a big night for me tonight. Go Darren Waller. All right, we'll talk to Duke Ellingson when we come back right here on Sports Radio TSN 1200.